Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, I've had so much fun asking you hypothetical questions. I wanted to just make it an entire show.
All right, let's do it.
All right. So the way this is going to work, I have seven questions here jotted down, and we're going to see where those things take us over the course of the three segments that we have to record. If it takes us too long, then I have those to come back to for future episodes. But let's go ahead and get this thing started. Look, this is the kind of stuff that we want to do to lighten the mood, to have a little bit of fun, and give you guys a respite from all the stuff that's going on. I'm not even going to try to mention it right now. Let's dive right in. Pete, what's your greatest athletic accomplishment?
Ooh, I threw four innings of a no-hitter in a Little League All-Star game.
Damn. Pedro'd it.
Yeah. Yeah. A little lefty out there, right? Side-arming it a little bit. Baseball was probably my best sport.
Like, I'm a little pissed that you didn't say, like, our ping-pong matches.
Oh, no, Anthony. That didn't even register.
Oh, okay.
I handled the.
All right, that'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Fuck off, Pete. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
It wasn't even memorable, Anthony. I forgot how I whipped your ass until you brought it up just now, in fact.
What's funny is that, like, in all of those hangouts, it would always hit that one spot where you and I would look at the ping pong table, and we look kind of at each other, like, all right, it's go time. And then, like, everybody else at the party would just kind of, like, stand around and watch us play ping pong. And then Harrison, we had a convinced play one time, and poor Harrison didn't do as well.
Yeah. No, it wasn't. Didn't work out.
But yeah, no. So tell me about the All Star game. Like, how old were you? What kind of a pitcher were you? Like, were you a junk ball pitcher?
So I was a crafty lefty, right? Mm-hmm. I kind of threw from different arm angles. I didn't have a lot of speed and was just kind of learning a curveball, but I had a decent changeup and mm-hmm. I could locate my fastball a little bit. I was, you know, I'm like 10 or 11 years old, I think, and already crafty because that's how little, like, actual athletic talent I have, right? Like, I've already had to figure out how to, like, the little tricks and bullshit to pull off.
You knew early on, I am not going to overpower anybody.
This is not going to work out for me if I approach it that way, so. Yes, nice. An early appreciation due to my lack of natural gifts for the little things in sports that help you gain advantages. You know, 40 years later, here I am, right? So, yeah, that was my greatest athletic accomplishment was, you know, I think I got like three strikeouts in four innings, just, you know, inducing a lot of ground ball type, you know.
Yeah.
Not blowing anyone away, just, you know, pitching to contact.
Was it David Cone? David Cone, who, I guess Greg Maddux is like the ultimate junk ball pitcher, right? But there was another pitcher who was just like incredible at getting ground balls, and he would just mow through teams just by, that was all he would, I think he was for the Yankees too. But yeah, I would, Jimmy. What's that?
Jimmy Key maybe?
Maybe. That doesn't register.
Sorry, anyway, yeah.
I mean, once you say Greg Maddux, like, it doesn't get any better than Greg Maddux in that department.
That was the period of baseball where I was actually paying attention. So, like, you talking about that, I'm like, oh, I can be helpful here. Like, I might actually know this guy's name. Alas, I did not.
No, I mean, you could have named any number of pitchers, but who am I thinking of? I mean, like, Jared Weaver was a little later, but I'm thinking about somebody a little earlier who's, I don't know. Great audio. Me thinking of late 90s pitchers.
You know what's funny that you bring up Jared Weaver is I've had a weird life, man, with like a bunch of like odd jobs. Mm-hmm. And I shot one wedding as a videographer. Mm-hmm. And it was like, and Jared Weaver was like it was like his cousin or something like that. And like, I met him when he was, you know, like in his senior year as a prospect. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that just had this like vague memory, like, oh yeah, I did this job like once. And I was like, meh, like I didn't really like it and just moved on.
Yeah. Jared Weaver was always funny because he looked like somebody who threw really hard, but then he threw like 85. So.
Right. Right.
All right, your least favorite type of sports take. What's the one take that you'll either see on Twitter or on TV or something like that that just immediately makes you, like, not just turn off that show or you know, on just ignore a tweet or whatever, but will actually make you just stop following or stop respecting whoever gave that take.
All right. So stop respecting is definitely too harsh here. But like the one that I really, really try to avoid and hate is I hate like rankings, like top 10 lists and things like that, especially when it comes to like, you know, great players of all time or great Lakers or, you know, like trying to like pit one against the other. And the older I get, the more I appreciate just like, you know, I got to see Michael Jordan play in his prime. I got to see Magic. I got to see all of these like all time greats. And so rather than like when I was younger, I'm like, man, fuck Michael Jordan. You know what I mean? Like that was my attitude in my teenage years because I'm going around high school and like everybody's wearing a fucking Bulls starters jacket. You know what I mean? And
which were slick as hell, by the way.
And I'm like, they were. I mean,
you missed out on not being wrong.
We were like, right. We were like 90 minutes outside of LA, right? And I'm like, what the fuck were all these Bulls fans? Like, who are you people, right? So I had a very like, man, fuck Michael Jordan type of like attitude in my teenage years and even my 20s. As I've gotten older, it's like, it was pretty fucking cool to see that dude like at his best, you know? And you see all these arguments, you know, about LeBron versus MJ, for example. And it's nice to have been old enough to remember MJ and remember and have not liked him, right? Because I was a hater. And but also seeing that he did get kind of overrated too, to a certain degree. Like I remember the actual player that he was, which was great and definitely in the argument for the greatest of all time.
This is going to be the title of tomorrow's show or the episode. Pete, according to at Laker Film Room, Michael Jordan, little overrated.
Jesus Christ, don't do this to me, please. This is why I don't like opening up to you, Anthony. You burn me. God damn.
All right. Sorry. Continue. I actually kind of agree, though. Like, I think it's a little weird that people are not allowed to discuss whether or not he is the greatest basketball player of all time.
Right. He's not like a Roman god, right? Yeah. Like he was great, and he was arguably the greatest of all time. The way in which his game is not critically looked at relative to pretty much every other all-time great.
Right.
And because it's like, so he was great. He carried himself with a ton of swag, and it was the best marketing campaign that's ever been put together in sports has been the one that was put around Michael Jordan with, you know, a nod to Bo Jackson. Cause those were great, but it was more short-lived. Right. Yeah. But like all of those things kind of came together to create like a Michael Jordan myth. Mm-hmm. And so now this is all my hater side coming out, right? Like this is what I was arguing about in 19 and 20s, right? I also, as I've gotten older, be like, yeah, but he was still really fucking cool to watch. You know what I mean? Like he was still amazing. And I can appreciate that while still being capable of those arguments. But I actually like those type of arguments. I don't like the list. Like the number one is MJ. Yeah. Number two. Like those are the ones that I kind of push away from.
Yeah. I always prefer when people go like rankings or whatever, I always like to go kind of ranges versus a hardline list, right? Mm-hmm. So like for Jordan, I'll say anywhere from 1 to 3, maybe 1 to 2 is where I would probably have him in a list, right? Kobe, I'd probably put him anywhere. You could have him as high as 6 or 7 on your all-time list and maybe as low as 14 or 15 on your list. And that's, you know, you're starting to talk spectrums. And if you have that player outside or, in, you know, outside on either end of that spectrum of your range, that's when I start to wonder where you're kind of coming from on that player. But the people who just definitively say MJ 1, Kareem 2, LeBron 3, Magic 4, da-da-da 5, da-da-da. That's just, it seems really exhausting. And it seems like a really boring way to look at the sport.
Well, that's the thing. I would even say that like, you have to have all sorts of before you can really have this conversation. I guess it's the thing. Like, I would love to like really have the all-time greats type of conversation. All right. But you kind of got to come to
we're gonna change
certain ground
directions here, and we're gonna.
Oh, is it? If we got plenty of time, unfortunately, my man, we got plenty of time to fill. So let's table that for down the road. Let's go down that rabbit hole for sure.
You were saying though, like, if you were going to have it, how would you have it?
Well, what I'm saying is like the ground rules.
Yeah.
Like you have to establish ground rules. You got to have like 2 days of conversations about like, all right, are we fast forwarding like players from the 1960s into a life like a player from the 2020s lives? Like if you're a ball player, mm-hmm. you are at a very early age identified. You're working with professionals. You're on a regiment. You're traveling all over the country for AAU. You're like, you live a long professional life, right? Mm-hmm. It's like this long internship before you even get drafted. Like if you're a first round draft pick, you've been like at the very top of that world. So you've been a little professional for all your life. Like,
yeah.
That wasn't Jerry West or Elgin Baylor. Mm-hmm. They were great in their respective time periods, but do you give them like the benefit of a lifetime of elite training and modern science and all of that? Conversely, do that in reverse, right? We could, again, let's go down this rabbit hole at a different point,
yeah.
But like if it grates at me to see it like number one, this guy, number two, that guy, because it's a very rich conversation to be had. It just reduces it to like, it's like, that's not even what it's about, you know?
Yeah. I feel like so basically it sounds like what you're saying is I want to see your research if you're going to put together that list.
Well, yeah, and we have to come to like certain terms to normalize,
right?
Like if it's just like who's a better ball player, like 80% of the dudes in the NBA are better than pretty much anybody who played in the 1960s,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's just a function of, it's not all just some individual talent or amazing thing that they did. It's a function of like they grew up in this environment.
The literal evolution of the species and the sport. The approach to the sport, yeah.
And you've also got to like a way bigger talent pool. The whole world plays basketball now, and like Luka Doncic comes in freaking polished at age 19. Are you kidding me?
Right.
You know, like the whole world's playing ball and has been for a long enough time now to where like legit prospects come from all over the world every year. So that expands the talent pool. So of course players now are better than they've ever been before. So how do we go across eras? How do I really compare, you know, Oscar Robertson to Kobe Bryant?
Yeah.
Because Kobe Bryant was, just on its face, like a way better basketball player than Oscar Robertson was.
Right.
It's just Oscar Robertson was for the 60s, like freaking incredible.
Well, right? Ahead of his
so
time.
So do we compare? Areas? Yeah. Sorry. I'm already going down the rabbit hole. Yeah.
That's been for a while, apparently. You can't help it with some of these conversations though. Like we talked about yesterday, yeah. in order to do what we do for a living, you have to be a little psychotic. And if you're that level of psychotic and you see this conversation going on, it's impossible for you to not dive down that rabbit hole, too. It's
right, impossible. And that's why I click off it, to answer your question. That's why I see them like, because I know if I get going, I'm going to get going. So, yeah.
All right, let's take a quick second. When we come back, we have a few more questions, about five more questions here to get to. We might, probably not going to get to all of them, but we'll see. I don't know. The list thing doesn't bother me so much because I don't know. I guess I can categorize it. This is a weird thing to say given my position and my career in life. Sports talk bores me.
Mm-hmm.
Like just straight like sports talk, I get bored real quick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That might be like it. That might be it.
It could be talked about a lot better than it is.
Yeah. That might be it. All right. So it's kind of completely changing directions here. Next question is, if you were to coach now with this industry as experience, or the experience that you've gained in this industry, studying coaching, comparing coaching, analyzing coaching, all that stuff, what would you change about your previous approach as a coach?
That's a really interesting question. I've thought about this a few times because I definitely have the coaching. It like as awesome as the whole LFR ride has been. Like there are times where I'm like, I'll just go coach in LAUSD for freaking $2,500 stipend. Like that sounds amazing to do that again. And
well, if you do that, let me know. I'll take over LFR for you.
Okay, there you go. So I definitely miss it. I would do a better job understanding that the people are way more important than anything, and just how like you know, you come in thinking of basketball and your job as a coach is that I got to have all these plays to run and I've got to have all of my X's and O's principles down pat. And you do. That is part of the job, right? Mm-hmm. It's also not the only part of the job or even the most important part of the job. It's really getting a group of people to work together in a manner where like you've got to make people feel comfortable in order to be inspired. And then you've got to inspire them. You've got to prove to them that you're not full of shit and that you're actually there to do the work and not all about talking big rah-rah speeches. Cause that shit gets old real quick if you're not actually about it. I would have dedicated more effort to establishing relationships with parents, relationships with
That's a great point.
Just everybody involved with the principal, with the, you know, which isn't to say that I don't think I had a bad relationship with those people, like the counselors, the teachers, we got along fine, but it was like a more of an acquaintanceship. Mm-hmm. I would make more of an intentional effort to know every English teacher in every grade, every math teacher, you know, the teachers that I'm going to have to talk to when it comes down to like, hey, why is my kid at a 1.8 GPA?
Right.
Right. Like, and that's for,
and have it not seem like, hey, for my purpose, why is this guy not passing? How can we make this all around more productive?
But that's the thing. That's why you've got to care about the person. Cause if you're not, and which is, again, I feel proud of the relationships that I did build in my coaching career. I thought it was like a, you know, 70-30 kind of mix between the people being more important at 70 and the X's and O's at 30. And the older I've gotten, I think it's like a 90-10 type of thing, honestly. I really do. So that's what I would change.
Yeah. That's the thing that somehow we haven't done a very good job. Not we, because I think we do talk a lot about the human element of coaching. But in general, I think the analysis of coaching is probably the thing we do the worst.
Right? Yes.
I think we prop up the great coaches a little bit too much for the wrong reasons. And I think we fail to understand why some coaches fail. And spend actual time thinking about what's going on there. And I think what it all comes down to is really at every level, but especially I feel like in the NBA, where the player is paid more than the middle management, right? In understanding how the coach handles the personalities and ego and which players might get along and which players, you know, which players, the chemistry between those two players off the court, how can I take advantage of that on it? You know, all that stuff. That you know, as great as somebody like Brad Stevens might be, and as great as, you know, some of the greatest tacticians in the history of the sport might have been,
Mike D'Antoni, yeah,
yeah. The thing that really separated, I think, the all time great coaches from the good ones that didn't reach that kind of upper tier, you know, the Phil Jacksons, the Greg Popoviches, the John Woodens, the Red Auerbachs, even, they understood people. And
they're leaders.
Yeah, and they understood their position in that totem pole too, right? Mm-hmm. The ones who kind of talk down to all of their athletes, in the NBA, that doesn't work. That's why you see a lot of college coaches fail miserably in the NBA, because they come from this power situation where they hold all the power in college, and then they get to the pros where the players hold all the power, and they don't understand how to conduct that business. And you know, John Beilein is John, right?
Yeah,
he's the most recent and maybe greatest example of this ever. Where he was, it was so out of whack in his opinion that he left mid-season. You know, it's that whole thing is fascinating to me. Let's move on
Go ahead. Sorry, just real quick. There's coaching basketball changed how I look at basketball forever. Yeah. Like it's the most, the single most impactful thing on how I see the game. And it's not just a function of like, oh, that's a wide pin down screen or all right. these, you know, flex cut, or all these terminologies. And I know you've had experience as well in this, like I would encourage anybody who has an interest for it to do it and pursue it.
Yeah.
Cause not just coaching, but just like having to be a leader and having to be responsible for other people is great preparation for being a parent. It's a great preparation for, other, you know, in your work, when you get promoted and get older and now you're like a boss of, you know, got other people depending on
yeah.
you. It's something that's very much, very helpful. So I would encourage if anybody who's listening, who's got an urge to go for that, definitely pursue that.
Absolutely. All right. Let's go one more question here before we get out of this second segment. Your least.
Sorry.
No. This is exactly what I did this for. I picked questions. I knew it would get us talking. Your least favorite Laker of all time.
Oh. Bro, I think it's Rondo. Like, maybe this is like heavy recency bias.
Maybe.
I'm working on this series for The Athletic on the 2010 finals. And so I'm rewatching it right now. I'm in the midst of rewatching the 2010 finals. And I definitely think that, you know, I am very much primed to disliking Rondo as a baseline because he's a fucking Celtic, right?
Yeah.
Like, and was with those teams that we went up against. I also like with Rondo. Rondo is a genius. I genuinely think Rondo is a basketball genius. Mm-hmm. That is precisely why he pisses me off as much as he does, because like he to me is somebody who's running game on everybody.
Yeah.
Right. Like he's really smart and he knows how to like manipulate opinions, get people on his side when the like actual substance of what he is not there.
Yeah.
And I just don't, and maybe that's really unfair and like a really, you know, messed up observation on my end, but
maybe
that's just how I feel about the dude, right? Is that he's been running game on people and that he's not authentic. Like I want to see him actually ball out. If you're like for real, this guy that like show that they earn your trust, right?
Right.
So between the Celticsness and then this guy who doesn't like really give his full effort, that I think is, you know, kind of running game on everybody. I think that's a pretty, and like he's not good, right? Or hasn't been good
yeah.
for my favorite team. That's probably that's a pretty strong combination, even though he's recent. I've had others though. I'll have to think of some of the older ones, but he's definitely the first that comes to mind.
That's a good one. I feel bad because I've learned that Brian Cook is apparently like a really, really nice guy.
I was thinking about Brian Cook, but I didn't hate Kwame as much as everybody else did, nor Smush.
Kwame was just drafted too high. And
right.
And Smush was a product of, like, all the shitty stuff that was going on with the Lakers at that time. Brian Cook, I can't stand players who don't look like they're trying hard.
Sure. That's the – yes. That's
and, an easy and Brian one. Cook, yeah. Like, I'm not sure if he ever broke a sweat in his NBA career. I don't think that ever happened. And that really yeah. rubbed me the wrong way. Let's take a quick second here. When we come back, we have a few really fun questions here to get to. It sounded like, and it looked like, you wanted that segment to keep on going and either name more least favorite Lakers or I don't even know what you yeah. wanted to talk about.
Yeah, so it's not a like defense of Smush Parker, but like I feel like the
nobody has to defend Smush Parker. That was kind of the problem. Like nobody had to care that he was on the court.
Oh, yes. And that's because he was barely an NBA player.
Yeah.
Like he was a D-leaguer before it was a G-leaguer. He was a D-leaguer for, you know, and barely in the NBA for a couple of years. Then the starting point guard for the Los Angeles Lakers and then barely in the NBA, then out of the NBA. Like mm-hmm. he was a fringe NBA guy all along. Why are we getting mad at the fringe NBA guy for yeah. not being a starting caliber player when we should be getting mad at the front office for having a fringe NBA guy as the starting point guard in the middle of Kobe freaking Bryant's prime?
Right. That's like asking, you know, instead of getting angry at the child for driving the car into the side of a building, why was the child in the driver's seat of a car in the first place?
Yes. Yeah. Not to infantilize Smush Parker. He worked very hard to get where he is. But yes, he should not have ever been the starting point guard for the freaking Lakers.
I wonder, is kind of wondering about or questioning Mitch Kupchak, is that too hot a take? Is it too?
No, like, it's not like Mitch. Mitch was a good GM. And like.
Good?
He wasn't a great. Yeah. He was a good GM.
Fair?
Over the course of his tenure. Yeah, I would say that he was a good GM. We had, you know, there's the POW trade, and I know that's one thing, but that was a big ass thing. Jerry West left at the beginning of the three-peat run, and yes, the West is the guy who put the foundation there, mm-hmm. but Kupchak kept them, like, they won three straight after, like, Kupchak was...
He didn't screw it up.
All three there. He didn't screw it up, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that he's the best GM. Like, he was a good, like, 6.5 or a 7 out of 10 caliber GM over the course of his career. I think the game kind of passed him by as he got older, which can happen. But he had weaknesses. He had strengths. I think he was a little more good than bad.
I'm cool with that. Let's go to the next question here. You're stuck in an elevator with Bill Simmons. Your absolute favorite podcast media mogul. Somebody you probably see eye to eye with on every basketball conversation that can possibly be had. So you get stuck in an elevator with Bill Simmons. You're not allowed to just sit there quietly.
Oh, I don't want to sit there quietly. This is a dream come true type scenario right here that you're describing. No, there ain't no sitting quietly. This I might like make the fucking elevator stop like intentionally. All right. Just so give me a couple hours with that dude. I won't even take that long. So listen, I respect Bill Simmons on a professional level. He is a guy who was a fan. He told us he was a fan at the front end, and he wrote from that perspective and was able to build what he's built just by doing that. He's got all sorts of opinions that I disagree with him on that I think are, you know, just pure jackassery. Mm-hmm. But strictly from what he accomplished, it's easy for a guy like me, right, who has always produced content from a fan's perspective and grown, not, you know, obviously not like that, but you know, to a place where I can do it for a living. He's a guy that like, hey, I can look to him and be like, look, there's an example of someone doing kind of what I've done and being able to be successful with it. So I respect him on that level. And this is exactly why I would just be like, cause if I didn't respect him on some level, I wouldn't want to have the fucking conversation with him.
Mm. Right.
It's about Kobe Bryant.
Okay.
And this is, It irritates the shit out of me that he doesn't understand Kobe's brilliance, because he possesses some attributes to where he became like the best at what he does in the world. Right. And like when he talks about like Magic and Larry Bird saying that Kobe was their favorite player and realizing like, oh, that's when I realized I didn't get it. It's like, yes, but it's like, think of what you built, right? Think of all of the steps, all of the things you had to be good at, all of the things you had to master in order to build.
You're talking about Simmons personally.
I'm talking about Simmons personally.
Yeah.
What he's had with the podcast network, with Grantland, what's the fucking one now? The Ringer. Mm-hmm. As a writer and a columnist, he's been able to grow in multiple mediums. And by doing that, you have to get good at several different skills, at a lot of different skills, and master them to a degree. And then everything, you know, starts becoming pop. You know, if people read your articles, they're going to pull over to your podcast. Right. And mm-hmm. so it grows. But he had to be good at a lot of shit. Also, a lot of shit behind the scenes, too, business wise, in order to make the type of deals and the money and the sponsorship, all of that. So he's a guy from a media perspective that has mastered a bunch of different skills. How the fuck can you see that in Kobe Bryant and what's supposed to be one of your favorite sports, if not your favorite sport?
Yeah.
You can't see the similarities in a guy that like woke up and tried to get as good as he possibly could get. And he had flaws in his mentality, just like everybody did. But Kobe tried his damnedest to be the very fucking best. Mm-hmm. And Bill Simmons has been able to do that in a certain way in his professional career. And that is what irritates the shit out of me, is that you cannot recognize a core attribute that made you as successful in somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Why? You know?
I guess. All right. Well, two things. One, like since Kobe died, he's meaning Simmons, has kind of fessed up to some of that stuff, right? That, like, he sees him differently now. It just sucks that, like, it takes somebody dying to get there, you know? Give yeah, somebody man. Flowers while they're alive. But I'll also say, if you talked earlier about, like, Simmons writing from the perspective of a brand, a writer, or a fan, and that became part of his brand. And if part of his brand became, or was essentially, hey, I'm a Celtics guy, I'm a Boston guy, I hate all things Lakers, of course I'm going to take every opportunity I can to shit on Kobe Bryant. I could probably find some stuff I have in common with Paul Pierce, but fuck Paul Pierce forever. Right?
Like, oh, right, no. Hey, look. That's not it. It's not the... Yes, I'm biased against Celtics players, mm-hmm. right? Like, of course I am, right? But I'd like to, like, I respected Larry Bird and I respected Kevin Garnett. Yeah. I knew exactly how good those dudes were,
yeah.
right? And I didn't have to denigrate them, especially when there's, like, players aren't, like, when we're talking franchise, like, I have less of an issue with Celtics players than I do with the Celtics organization. That's what I hate, right?
Yeah.
Dudes are coming and going, and half of them although ain't even picking to
Paul
be there.
Pierce, like, boy, not...
no. Hey, bro, some of them earn it. Paul Pierce, Danny Ange, yeah. some of them motherfuckers earn okay. All right, I'm not saying I don't
hate I just wanted to be clear here. Paul Pierce shat himself and used that to, like, ignite a run in a final series.
No, I'm not saying I can't hate a Celtics player. In fact, them being Celtics certainly makes it easier. I'm just saying that being a Celtics player does not automatically mean that I hate that guy, right? Mm. But they can certainly earn it. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I can see that. Like, I can see the talent and ability in, especially, like, amongst the great ones. Like, you gotta tip your cap when somebody can do it at the very level over and over again. And just, like, seeing that excellence. And motherfucker lives in L.A. Simmons lives in L.A. Yeah. You know how many times he's seen Kobe Bryant play up close and personal? And you were in that much a denial of greatness and excellence that was right in front of you that you couldn't see it yourself? When all your heroes, Magic and Bird, all of these people are saying that are in basketball, that, like, they eat – that's what people don't get. That's what I don't think fans understand, is the degree to which, like, the truly great ones – like, this is their obsession. They are single-mindedly obsessed. LeBron keeping his body together like this for 17 years is a fucking nut. He has to be so fucking – zeroed in on that, and that's what the truly great ones are. That's why when we were talking earlier in the show about the all-time list, it's like, yo, can we start with this, like, really high level of respect for all of them?
Yeah.
When we, because to get to that level in something this competitive, you've got to be incredible. Like, yes, you have to have incredible talent too, but that's not enough. Mm-hmm. And so, anyway,
no,
That would be the topic if Simmons and I were in that elevator.
I'd love to listen in on it for a couple reasons. First off, I have to feel like because of how asinine it sometimes sounds, and because of how smart Simmons, and maybe it's just a blind spot, right? And maybe I'm biased here because I'm looking at this guy who has built a literal podcast empire, something we are all striving for, right? I'm kind of wondering if it's just a blind spot on Simmons' part that he just he refuses to get it, or he gets it and is trolling at this point because he made a lot of money on or built a pretty big platform off the idea of trolling Laker fans, right? Like, it strikes me as odd that the Ringer doesn't employ a single Laker fan.
Right.
And you know, that, again, it might just be a blind spot business-wise, but there's a giant addition to his team that he is outright ignoring, right, for I don't know what sake, right? Because in L.A., where that company is based out of, and it's something that, you know, the big thing that they always talk about, their basically MO is, we look for things that people are obsessed with or are really passionate about and, you know, cover those things in a way that matches that obsession, that matches that passion, right? Mm-hmm. They're in LA and they are in that way ignoring the Lakers. So it, like, makes me wonder if it's just an intentional, or if it's always been an intentional idea of Simmons to just always tweak Laker fans in that respect, especially with Kobe, something they're going to be the most passionate about.
Oh, so that I don't have a problem with that, honestly, because like every opportunity I get to fucking dig at Celtics fans, I'm going to take that. Mm-hmm. Of course I am. Right. Like that's part of the fandom. The fandom would not be authentic if there wasn't, like, after seeing, you know, how many times, and this is why, like, this year, with the whole, like, are you rooting for the Clippers or are you rooting for the Celtics? Like, which would you rather win? And I'm like, y'all are fucking crazy. And I know I'm in like a 10% minority in saying this, but I'm like adamant will not move off of this position. Is 85 NBA Finals, 87 NBA Finals, 84 NBA Finals, 2008, 2010, five times, dude. Ain't nobody else compare in terms of how many times we've gone up against them. And that goes, and it's like generational, like our Laker fan forefathers, the guys who listen to this that are in their 50s and 60s, the fans who go way back, right? They go back to Jerry West and they go back to battling against, against Havlicek and, you know, Bill Russell's Celtics and, and all those teams. So this is like our birth, like, rival. You know what I mean?
We were born into.
We were born into this. We were born into the rivalry. And so, yes, that I don't even know where I was going with that. But yes, that, like, all of that, like, that's why I didn't, with the whole, like, I'm like, fucking Clippers, are you kidding me? They ain't shit. Like, they have to win, like, the next 10 titles before I'm like, all right, fuck these guys, you know? Like, I just don't have that same sort of passion after battling in the NBA Finals five times in my lifetime, you know? And so, like, Simmons tweaking Laker fans, it's like, you wouldn't be a Celtics fan that age if you didn't. We'd beat them more than they, right? I think we're up on them in Simmons' lifetime, at least his cognizant memories, right? And maybe, yeah.
I think it's close.
At least in head-to-head battles. I don't know how old Simmons is, but he probably remembers like the 76 title with Havlicek. And anyway, so that doesn't bother me. I do think it's a blind spot, though. I do think that it's part of what bothers me about the Boston organization and the Celtics in general is that it's a blind spot to the notion that there is more than one way to be great. You have this like very limited, and it's been my whole life. The Celtics have had like this very similar mentality. How they go about being great, and they are a great NBA organization. I could never take that away from them. You know, tip of the cap to how they've been able to be relevant for as long as they have been, even though I love the kind of purgatory place they've been stuck in for the last few years of like, they're really good. So you're not going to make any massive changes, but they're not good enough to like win an NBA title.
Well, but this is kind of the point though, right? Like, because they've only defined greatness in that one way, that's why they've isolated themselves in the purgatory that they find themselves in. By thinking like, if you were to ask a Celtics fan, who is the most important figure in Celtics history? Do they say Red Auerbach? Do they say Bill Russell? Do they say Bird? Right?
I should say Bill Russell. They should. They would probably say Red Auerbach.
This is Boston we're talking about. They're probably going to say Auerbach. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yep. And that's the problem.
That's it right there. That's why they're in the purgatory that they find themselves in. To take it back to what we were talking about earlier in the show, right, where we were talking about the idea that college coaches can't quite come to grips with the fact that they don't have the same amount of power in the NBA as they do in college. Like, Boston Celtics fans, they want to harken back to yesterdecade, when it was the coach, it was the organization that came first. And that's just not how it goes anymore. And approaching it that way is how you get placed in this purgatory of second round exit after second round exit.
Bro, what is Red Auerbach without Bill Russell?
Nothing. Some fat dude who smokes cigars.
I mean, he acquired many Hall of Famers. He was conceptually brilliant, the fast break offense of the 60s. He did a lot of innovative things in the NBA. So I don't want to denigrate the contributions that Auerbach had to the NBA game, because they were significant. That said, yeah, he ain't nowhere near how we think of him without Bill Russell. If you don't think Bill Russell was the most important Celtics figure, you're you look at the game of basketball in a very different way than I do. Yeah. It's part of what bothers me about the Celtics.
Yep. All right. We'll take this last question here to wrap this up on. This is a fun one. This is guaranteed to get us a couple laughs, I think. The take that you were absolutely the wrongest about. You go back through all of... At this point, we've done a lot of talking about sports. And you're a lot more measured than me. So I'm sure, you know, it won't be as funny as my worst. But the take that you're absolutely the wrongest about.
Like, I'm going through the Rolodex of many bad takes I've had, and
Michael Jordan.
I keep getting to different ones that are. This is probably that's my
it.
Worst one.
That's it. I want this one. You are not getting off the phone until you give me that take that just made you laugh that way.
Bro, I thought Sean Bradley was going to be fucking awesome. Like, when he was coming into the draft, he was 7'6". He had a jumper. He was like, you know, blocking everything. He was kind of mobile considering he's 7'6". I was like, that motherfucker's going to revolutionize the center position. I was 13 years old in my defense, okay. But that was, yeah, Sean Bradley was going to fucking future Hall of Famer.
In your defense, he was pretty good in Space Jam. Legitimately funny, I think, in spots in Space Jam. Like, I thought, I went back and rewatched it. A little too on the nose right now to rewatch it right now. But Sean Bradley was really good in that movie. Like, I really enjoyed all the scenes he was in. So that was really fun. Not a Hall of Famer, though. Not quite a Hall of Famer.
No, certainly not. How about you, man?
all right. This is how I have this is the way my cognitive dissonance works. But I thought Javaris Crittenton was going to be incredible.
Oh yeah, I was wrong on that one too.
I was all the way in on him, and now again, this is a terrible sentence. I'm not even a joke about it. But like, I kind of want to see his career if it plays out where he's always a Laker. I want to see his entire career play out if he never gets traded away, and see how that goes. Because I really do think, you know, once you go to, because that was a pretty insane Wizards team that brought out the absolute worst in just about everybody involved in that thing.
Seemed to be.
And so I'd like to see, even if it isn't just with the Lakers, but just like put him in not the worst situation he possibly could have gone to, but this like bigger point guard. With insane lateral quickness, great finishing ability. His shot was always going to be a bit of a detriment, I think, in the NBA. But I thought he was going to be really, really good. I was actually, I wouldn't say bummed is the word to use here, but like finding out when they traded for Powell that he was a part of the trade, I was like, ah, damn, there was no way to try to pull that off without him. But yeah, that's I think that's the player that I thought the highest of that just went to the basement of the basement of the basement of the basement that he possibly could have. But is that something? Are we calling that wrong, or are we calling that just because from a basketball standpoint, am I wrong, or is it just from a person standpoint? So, good Lord.
So, Anthony, do you have a hard time admitting you're wrong? Because you gave yourself this own question, and you have arrived at a destination where you're like, but was I really wrong? Go on, give us what you were wrong about. If you don't believe it, then if you think it's some sliding door scenario
objectively, where Javaris Crittenden
doesn't get...
Objectively,
that's what I'm saying. Right. But you wanted the one that made me laugh, right? Yeah. The one that made me go, comically wrong.
All right.
Like, not one that you defend, right?
It's a good thing there aren't records of this like in text or anything anymore, but may have at one point compared Sunya Way to Magic Johnson.
Oh, like for real, for real?
Like actually 6'9" point guard. He could pass the ball. Like I thought he was like, the Lakers got an absolute steal. They're just going to extend Kobe's career. This is incredible. Turns out
type of take I'm looking for. There you go, Anthony. That's the one I'm looking for.
My dad was like, Anthony, I think if the Lakers had drafted the next Magic Johnson, other teams might have drafted him first.
That is some OG wisdom right there.
That's probably the wrongest I've ever been about a player. But it's also like, it's fucking Sunjue. I really thought he had it, but it turns out like he just didn't have. I don't know. You remember Sunjue? Do you think he didn't have this? Like, was it a skill thing or was it a mentality thing with him?
Yes. I mean, yeah.
Pete, I want to know what stopped him from being the next Magic Johnson. That's what I'm asking.
Talent, Anthony.
Everything. Literally everything that it takes to be Magic Johnson.
Other than he was 6'9" and could dribble, and you were like, Magic Johnson.
There he is. It wasn't even Lamar Odom. This was fun. This was fun. It was a really fun
pod, dude. This felt good to laugh this much. It's been a while.
We're gonna do a bunch of these, I think. We're gonna come back to this concept a few times. If you guys have questions for either Pete or I that are, you know, somewhere along these lines, I'm probably a lot more open to topics or whatever, so fire them away at Anthony Irwin LA or at Locked On Lakers. But these are fun. If you guys have questions like this, obviously the iTunes mailbag is the best place to put them, because that's something I check on a weekly basis. But yeah, this was fun. This was cathartic. I hope this really helped you guys get through what was probably going to be a pretty mundane Wednesday anyway. Have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. Be safe out there. And we'll talk to you tomorrow.